and welcome to the D1 Baseball Road to Omaha show. We have approximately 52 minutes of heaven prepared for you. I am your host, Michael Patrick Rooney III. I am joined by the great Aaron Fitt, the equally great Kendall J. Rogers. No idea what J stands for. Might not even be accurate, but we're going to go with it. Gentlemen, this is the week of Omaha. How are we feeling? The plane ride to Omaha is imminent.
I'm fired up. I think Kendall and Martha could use a little bit more sleep, but
factually correct.
But you know, I think Kendall's going to get his second wind as soon as that plane touches down.
No, we're good. You know, it's been a long past week, but you know, boys, we're headed back to Omaha. How about that?
Yes. Yeah. Hey, I don't know if you guys saw it. I got a couple things for you. I don't know. Well, hey, first of all, guys, now that we're in the postseason at D1 Baseball is sponsored by our good friends at Louisville Slugger and DeMarini. Again, Louisville Slugger and DeMarini, really appreciate their support as we really get after it here in the postseason. I don't know if you saw Tennessee Baseball's Instagram page, but all I'm going to say is I shared it to my story. It's a little skit. The two lead actors in the said skit are Tony Vitello and Peyton Manning. And I will figure out a way to post it to Twitter, too. It is must watch. Must watch. And how about Peyton Manning getting involved in college baseball? Come on now.
Berkey is going to have a field day with that.
Yes, yes, that's right. That's right. They, you know, Fitzy, as we like to say, they couldn't afford Tom Brady, so they got Peyton Manning. That's pretty good. That's right.
And well, because, you know, Brady's got a day job still. I don't know.
That's a good point. Never Tennessee. I see you, Justin. I see you. Gentlemen, so here's what we're going to do on this show. We're going to go around the 8 Super Regionals. I got to tell you guys, Super Regional weekend is very emotional for me. I know that's a weird thing to say. I've lived the wrong end of a Super Regional, and I know how heartbreaking that is. Like, you can touch Omaha. You can feel it, and it's just... It's heartbreak that you will have for life. I hate to say it that dramatically, but that's the truth. And then the people that are winning, it's just like this elation. So I struggle with Super Regional weekend. I'm an emotional mess. I don't know how you guys feel. It's an emotionally charged weekend for me.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I mean, especially because, you know, getting to Omaha is just like, you know, it's the thing that you break your huddle with in the fall, you know, Omaha. Mm-hmm. It's like, it feels like once you get over that hurdle, you want to win. Everybody wants to win it all, and they always say, "Oh, we're not done." But like, once you get to the promised land, it feels like it's been a success, no matter what. Unless you're LSU, in which case, you better bring home the hardware,
or you want the coach fired,
right?
Yeah,
yeah. You know what? Actually, it was kind of weird. Like, as I was watching, like, Arkansas against NC State. Obviously, I don't care who wins, but like, it was almost like it almost gives you some anxiety, like seeing the anxiety on Arkansas's faces, you know, like late in that game, you can see it in the dugout, you can see it in the stands. And then whenever Jose Torres hits that home run, like, everybody can see it. Like, you know, it's very interesting. It's always weird just to see the emotions back and forth in those things.
No doubt. And I would say, Kendall, to your point, I think it's so spot on. Even Arkansas, that played the most ferocious schedule I think we've seen in a decade, all the pressure situations those kids were in, there's no simulating Super Regional pressure with Omaha on the line. There just isn't. For the fans, for the players, for the umpires, I don't care. And what you said, Fitzy, a second ago, and then we'll jump into this thing, I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're LSU under Skip Bertman. Every season that ends in Omaha, whether you went 0-2, 3-2, won the whole thing, it's a season that will be celebrated for posterity. Do you know how many seasons that end in a Super Regional get celebrated? Zero. Like, nobody ever talks about, you know, the team. I mean, that's maybe a little dramatic, but you're not talking about Super Regional appearances, right? You're talking about Omaha, or you're not talking about Omaha. That's the intensity of that weekend. So, let's jump in. Oh, go ahead, KR.
No, I was going to say one thing I was going to kind of bring up before we roll in here is, like, the only thing that's really weird to me is when you look at these teams across the country that have been really good all year long, it was really interesting to me to see coaches go in, like, a different directions. For instance, like Arkansas and Ole Miss, I thought it was really interesting. Like, all year long, those two teams, especially Arkansas, they won with the weekend starters they had, right? They took care of business. But, you know, Arkansas starts Copps, and Ole Miss starts Taylor Broadway, and it was the final game, and both those teams lost. So I just thought it was interesting to me that those two teams in particular started their closers and kind of went away from a typical weekend in that final game. I don't know if like pressing the panic button is the right thing to say there, but I don't like getting out of that groove. And it almost permeates anxiety on your team a little bit, because it's like, hey, if we feel like we have to start Kevin Kupps, like obviously, like should we not believe that we should win this game? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
Yeah. I think it's a great segue, Kendall, because we're going to do Arkansas NC State first. But I think, you know, I think the counter to that is, hey, Brian O'Connor started Griff McGarry with Omaha on the line, and that had not been a good harbinger for that team earlier in the season.
Okay.
And it's hey guys, let's just jump into Fayetteville, because it's a weird place to lead off, but it's top left on my bracket sheet, so that's where we're going. Fitzy, I'm going to start with you. How did NC State pull this off?
Well, I want to start by touching on something that Kendall just said. You know, one thing about NC State that stands out is just the consistency of the lineup and the rotation basically all year long, once they figured out the rotation pieces. But I mean, you know, Elliott Avent's lineup has got the same nine guys every game. If you look at, you know, their stats, it's like the same nine guys, except for, I guess, Butler missed a few games, but same nine guys played all the games. And in the rotation, it's the same three guys. You know, it's Reed Johnson, Sam Heifel, Matt Willitson, and then here comes Villeman and Justice in the bullpen. It's only five guys. Their formula was they had to stay in the winner's bracket in a regional, and they did that because they don't have a deep pitching staff. But it's such a contrast with these teams like Kendall's talking about that are starting their closers in a third game because they don't have a third, or in some cases even a second, really reliable starter. NC State does. I mean, maybe they're not dominant stuff guys. They don't have dominant stats, those starters. It's, you know, ERAs around four, that kind of deal. But they pound the zone. They get you deep into the game, middle to late innings, and then you hand it off to Villeman and or Justice. And that formula has really worked for NC State, and they stuck with it. I thought it was such a stroke of genius, really. Maybe it was a no-brainer, but it was such a smart move. They're down 7-1 in the third inning, and you don't want to say they punted the game, but they basically punted the game, right?
Yeah.
You take out Reed Johnston, you're not going to bring in one of your two big guns. You're not going to bring in Villeman or Justice down 7-1. You're going to bring in your lesser experienced guys down on your depth chart. You're going to wear it. You're going to lose 21-2, but you're going to maximize your chances to win the next two games. It reminded me of the 2004 ALCS where, you know, the Red Sox leave Tim Wakefield out there to wear it. They lose 19-8. They're down 3-0. Everybody thinks they're done because they just got blown out. Well, I mean, it's almost by design. It's like, hey, let's save our bullets for the next three games. Our best chance to win this thing is if we just take our lumps in this one and then come back.
KR, did Fitzy just freeze on us?
I think he did.
Gosh, he was rolling too.
He was in a groove. He was so shocked by that super regional that he was frozen.
Fitzy, you froze when you said ALCS.
Oh, no. Well, boy, I said a lot after that. Can you hear me now? Is my connection back?
You're good.
Yeah, we got you now.
I mean, it was like the 2004 ALCS where the Red Sox, you know, the game three, they send Tim Wakefield out there and they get blown out 9-8 and Wakefield just wears it. You know, he just like takes his lumps and, they're not going to use their other bullets. They're going to save their bullets and their best chance to win is to just kind of take the beating in that game and then come back the next day. And that's what NC State did. I think a lot of people overreacted to because it was 21-2. But I didn't. I mean, I looked at the guys that they threw and it's like, well, they're playing to win the next 2 days. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the smart play.
Yeah. I like it. KR, what, give me a take from Fayetteville.
Well, I think the biggest thing for me is I really felt like Arkansas, for the most part, did not play that great the last 2 weeks of the season. You know, you look back at Hoover, I thought they played really well. Chuck Welch had some big hits for him, and they certainly got some big hits in the regional. But, like, I just didn't feel like they played at, like, an elite level that weekend. And I didn't feel like they played an elite level against NC State. They had some chances against NC State, and give the Pack some credit for getting out of some of these jams. But they had some chances and weren't able to take care of business. Christian Franklin, I want to say he had a pretty rough weekend against the Pack. I want to say he had a hit or two, maybe. I don't think he had a great weekend.
Yeah, he had strep throat all weekend, right? Like he's had strep throat the last couple weeks. Yeah.
Yeah. So they had guys that had produced all year long who just didn't play very well. And so, you know, I think on one hand, I don't think Arkansas played that great. On the other, I think when you look at NC State, I think NC State, honestly, might have surprised him a little bit because, I mean, if anybody watched him in the ACC tournament, you're sitting there watching, you know, Villeman out of the bullpen, you're like, damn, this guy's pretty good. Yeah. And then you look in that Arkansas game and you've got Villeman, then all of a sudden you got Evan Justice, like 96 from the left side. Like, dude, that's a really, really difficult look. I don't care if you're Arkansas or if you're St. Peter's.
Yeah.
And it's 96 and it's funky, herky jerk, mm-hmm. low slot, 2,500 RPMs, explosive life. I mean, it's just like, it's now that he's learned how to command that pitch, he's become a real, real big time dude at the back, you know. And Villeman too. I mean, his velocity has jumped into the mid 90s, and he's developed that more power breaking ball to go with the fastball, and just a different animal. Both those guys are just different animals than they were a year ago, and so is High Phil, and you know, Willardson has matured. I mean, that was really the key for them, I think, to make that run in the second half, because really they hit all year long. You know, even in the beginning of the year when they were struggling, their offense was fine. They just had to get the pieces figured out on the mound, and that was just a matter of maturation. It's a matter of those young kids growing up. You know, you had mm-hmm. Reed Johnston. He was the constant. I mean, Justice was an older guy, but he really didn't come into his own as a big dude toward the second half. And once all those pieces clicked, I mean, now they're really rolling.
Yes. So Fitzy, you've inspired me with your previous series comp, and I'm about to drop a dime on you guys. But let me say it this way. I will start with my comp. I'll tell you what this series reminded me of: the 2008 Tempe Super Regional, where Arizona State was, you know, obviously heavy chalk that year, and they bombed Fresno State game one, if you guys remember. Now, it wasn't as extreme as this. They beat them 12-4. But at the end of that game, ASU started to get a little sloppy. It was a worse game than that. But remember, they're trying to play Brett Wallace at third base, and he made an error. And it just was not a great defensive team. And it bled over into game two. And obviously, as the series grew longer, the pressure on ASU just was mounting, like we saw with Arkansas this weekend. We had, you know, you end up with fake. The pressure was so intense, you end up with fake fights, right?
Why can't we have Bob Moore and cops getting a fake fight? Come on.
So now we've got no data points that work, right? We go fake fight, didn't work. No fight, no fake fight, didn't work, right? Doesn't matter. Sometimes when Cinderella shows up and she's ready, it's over. But I will tell you guys that obviously a lot of the conversation was around Kevin Kopp starting. And you made a point earlier already tonight, KR, that to me, where Arkansas lost this game, the advantage they had was their position player group against Matt Willardson. And they didn't get it done, right? Like, Willardson outpitched that position player group with a 4.73 ERA. It was probably higher than that coming into the game. And good on Matt Willardson, right? Like, and that's where Arkansas had to get it done. Now, I think, Kendall, it's a fair argument that, hey, was Arkansas's team spooked by Dave Van Horn doing something different than it worked all year, meaning start Kevin Copps? I don't know. I mean, it's a fair point, but bottom line is they had to win the game against Matt Willardson, and they didn't do it. And to your point, Fitzy, I'm telling you, think about game planning for NC State. That position player group is special. I mean, athletic, strong, speed, power, defend the heck out of it. And if you don't have a lead on NC State by the top of the sixth, good luck with that. I mean, to your point, Fitzy, Villeman's throwing a billion from the left-hand side, and then Justice is throwing a billion from, like, his shirt pocket, right? Like, it's just like, zoom! Mm-hmm. And so, man, like, you got to face those guys for the final 12 outs?
Can I just add that the beautiful thing in college baseball is that it wasn't 3 weeks ago that Arkansas knocked Kumar Rocker out in the third inning and wore him out, mm-hmm. and then 3 weeks later, Matt Willardson shuts him down at Fayetteville? I mean, how beautiful of a game is that?
It's amazing. It's amazing. So anyway, I'm gonna speak on my own behalf. Absolutely thrilled for LA Event and that coaching staff. I think Chris Hart, Clint Chrysler, these guys are awesome. Like, I think NC State is tragically underrated every year in a lot of ways for just the consistency of their program, but just heartbroken for college baseball because that Arkansas team is a beautiful team. And it's hard to get a team like that put together, and we won't get to see him in Omaha, and that's disappointing, really.
No, it is. Go ahead, Aaron.
Well, and I was just going to say, you know, the amazing thing about it is that, frankly, that Arkansas had the year that they had with really one starting pitcher. that they could count on to get them, mm-hmm. you know, deep into the game. And I know, you know, you lose Peyton Paulette. That is a huge, not, you know, he was up and down anyway. But you know, when he's on, he's a difference maker. You know, they went 20-4 against teams that hosted regionals, and 17 of those were away from Bom Walker. I mean, that's why we talk so much about this team and about this being one of the great regular seasons of all time. Is, I mean, it's insane. You know, it's insane. Those, the 3-0 at the Globe Life, the win the series at Louisiana Tech, and then all those road series wins against the top SEC teams. I mean, it's crazy what they did, and it was a testament, I think, to the quality of their lineup. You know, how difficult it was to navigate that thing, just the mature approaches, quality of their defense, which was elite, and Kevin Copps. But the fatal flaw that we always were worried about, and it's why it took me maybe a little bit longer to buy in Arkansas, was the starting pitching. You know, I mean, and how many times have we talked about it? Like, you kind of need a couple of horses to win the College World Series. I mean, very few teams have done it without a couple of those horses in the rotation. And in the end, it did hurt Arkansas. I mean, now they didn't lose the game because they started Kevin Copps. Kevin Copps was great. They lost the game because they got outpitched, but by NC State. But look, if you have a guy that can even get you into the fifth inning and then you bring in Copps, you know, maybe he's utterly untouchable for the last mm-hmm. four, and just, you know, instead of giving up three runs, which three runs is perfectly respectable in 8+ innings, but like maybe he gives up nothing, you know, if he comes out of the pen and only has to work four innings.
No question. KR, you had something. Go ahead.
I'll just say this too. You know, even though Arkansas lost that series, I mean, not to look ahead here, but like NC State's one of those teams, I think even with the College World Series field, like I wouldn't be that shocked if they played for the national championship. They're playing well at the right time. They're balanced 1-9 in the offensive lineup. You know, they've got guys that are have a good matchup at TD Ameritrade in the starting roles, and they got those big arms in the back end. Like, it would not shock me at all if NC State wins that bracket.
Yep, I'll finish the point with this, KR. Mm-hmm. This is the scariest team in the world in the postseason. They've got legit talent, right? They were preseason ranked, and this is a team that's already lived to see their own death, right? Like, they saw themselves go 1-8, and your season's like over, it's on the way to over, right? Mm-hmm. I know it was really early, but it was really ugly also. And then you survive that. And so not only are you good, but you also feel like you can survive anything. And those teams are so spooky in the postseason because they're just so much more tested than anybody else. And we'll move on from here. Kevin Copps, you are an American hero. It's one of the great stories in the history of college baseball. 2016, you redshirted. 2017, you had 5 starts. 2018, you had Tommy John surgery. 2019, you had a 4 ERA, basically. At 2020, you had an 8 ERA. 2021, you're the best pitcher in the last decade in college baseball.
Hey, I want to ask this real quick. Where is Kevin Copps from?
Sugarland, Texas, right?
That's why he's such a machine. He's from a Texan. The Republic.
You know, I heard the story the other day, though, which I actually hadn't heard. I'm surprised I hadn't. But after COVID hit and the season was canceled, like, he actually called Matt Hobbs and was like, hey, like, should I come back? Like, do you guys want me back? You know, and Hobbs is like, well, yeah, I mean, you know, we kind of think maybe you got some unfinished business here. But like, that's where we were. You know, this guy was like, yeah, do you want me back? And now he's going to win the Golden Spikes Award. Are you kidding me? I mean, it's insane. It's insane.
Kevin Copps, we will toast to you in Omaha. That will happen. You can count on it. Sending good vibes your way. What a season. So, gentlemen, let's go to Lubbock. And Kendall, I got criticized, Ravi and I, on Twitter for our pronunciation of Lubbock. So I'm going to have you try and help us with that. Yeah, they thought we were saying Lubbock. They thought we were saying, it's Lubbock.
Who cares?
Come on. Okay,
well, there you go. So here you go. I like it. Gracious. I like it. So let me start with you guys. Kendall, you go first because you are the resident Texan. What happened in Lubbock? What'd you see?
Well, I got to admit, I mean, I tweeted out going into that series that, you know, it's going to be 107 degrees. You know, I'd be curious to see how Stanford handles it. And what does my man Brendan Beck do? He wants the black jerseys. That's kind of when I knew the fight in Kyle Peterson's mean business.
Speaking of American heroes.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I don't know if I'd go that far, but yeah.
I meant Brendan Beck, sorry.
No, I just thought – I thought Stanford – kind of gave a nice little punch to Texas Tech that Texas Tech never really recovered from whenever Tim Tawa hit that home run early. I thought Stanford showed a lot of confidence there early in that game. And, like, Texas Tech, it was weird. I mean, I wouldn't say it's Arkansas-esque, but it was like they just never really looked dialed in. It's kind of weird. It's very un-Tim Tadlock-like, I felt like.
Yeah, yep. I agree. I was not going to bet against Texas Tech in a home super regional. I don't care how depleted they were on the mound. You know, they're so tough at home, although they haven't been as much this year, oddly enough. But just generally speaking, they're so tough at home. They have a great crowd. They're built for their ballpark. But, you know, Kendall made the point in the super regional previews that Stanford is a home run hitting team. They're very physical and kind of scary. I mean, for West Coast team, I think they're like top 12 in the country in home runs per game, which you don't see a whole lot from those Pac-12 teams. And so they were, you know, built to take advantage of the conditions there. They hit a lot of home runs this weekend. You know, Brock Jones was a beast, of course. Mm-hmm. Cody Huff. You had guys, you know, really beating Texas Tech at their own game. And I think ultimately the advantage for Stanford in the starting rotation was the big difference. I mean, and you know, Brennan Beck was awesome. Runes, you called the game. I mean, he was so good. You know, spotting up. I thought just painting the black with that fastball, driving it down into the bottom of the zone. I mean, just it just looked explosive. And then he's got the curveball and the slider going. He's a stud. I mean, he's really really good. And then how about Alex Williams? Just got back from Tommy John surgery in April. He's been building up kind of gradually. He was at 60 pitches, at 70 pitches, you know, week by week, you kind of get 120 something pitches in a super regional clincher, a two hit shutout against Texas Tech in Lubbock and a 100 something degree day. I mean, that's crazy to me for a guy that he's not blowing anyone away with velocity, but I mean, he's locating and he's got that good changeup and he just competed his tail off and it was something to see.
Yeah. And I'll tell you guys that, you know, a couple of the data points for me were, okay, Stanford showed up in Starkville in 2019 for a super regional with a brilliant team, like a way better team than this, really. And just that environment just gobbled them up and never let go of them. And I know that there was that fly ball in right center field, and maybe that changes it, you know, blah, blah, blah. But the truth is they were just not comfortable the whole weekend. And it just felt like to me, and Brendan Beck was one of those guys that they just said, hey, like we are going to throw punches early in this fight. And if it still doesn't work out, we can live with that. Think about this, guys. This was Stanford's seventh straight road super regional. I mean, think about that, how crazy that is. Seven straight road super regionals. And, you know, this is the first one that they've won since 2008. But so that was one data point, is I think Starkville 2019 really helped them. Number two, you guys just said it. Perfect ballpark for Stanford's offense, right? And Stanford, the Stanford's offense is going to show up in Omaha. And people are going to be like, why did they bring the football team? I mean, these are massive dudes. And Brock Jones is like, there's a reason he's a scholarship Division I football player. And then the final thing, Brendan Beck and Alex Williams, even though that's not a West Coast offense, I don't even know what that is. That's like an SEC offense, really.
Yeah.
But it was West Coast pitching, you know. And you know, when I first got into college coaching, you know, I was so naive. And I used to call it fastball down and away. And on the West Coast, they don't call it that. They call it a four spot. You know, like that's the four spot. And fastball in is the three spot. And, you know, on the West Coast, everything begins and ends with the four spot. Like, if you can't paint your fastball down and away, you can't pitch on the West Coast. And that's what Brendan Beck did, is he just shoved that fastball downhill. And it's not 94. It's not 88 either. But he just shoved it downhill, two different breaking balls. And Tech just, they were so flustered from that first inning. I was very disappointed with Tech's handling of the umpire. They just were, Chase Hampton got so emotionally out of control and everybody jumped on. And by the time they woke up, it was already 4-0 Stanford and Brendan Beck was dealing. And it was really too late in a lot of ways. And Alex Williams was just Brendan Beck with a little less command and a little less velocity, but plenty, and a wicked changeup instead of the breaking ball. So it was really fun to watch. I still think Texas Tech is a brilliant program. Like, I don't leave there thinking any less of Texas Tech. I might even think more of them, actually. I just thought it was a brilliant performance by Stanford, honestly.
You know, and I think Texas Tech's another one of those teams. We talk about the usage of your closer / reliever, but it's really interesting to me the way that Tech has handled Micah Dallas throughout his career. You know, he was a starter. He was a reliever last year, you know, for the COVID season. This year he was a starter. And then against Stanford, he's coming out of the bullpen. Like, I don't know. If I'm Texas Tech, instead of starting, like, let's say, Chase Hampton, like, I'm going with a guy who's pitched in Omaha and who has been on that big stage before. Like, that's the guy I'm starting. I'm not bringing him out of the bullpen in game two.
was a Friday starter for an Omaha team. You're right, Kendall. Yeah. I mean, that's it's an interesting point. And Runes, I want to go back to something you said, you know, about that 2019 experience in Starkville for Stanford. I asked David Esker about that and the players also. One of the players, I think it was Brendan Beck, said, you know, we were kind of just happy to be there, you know, honestly, in a super regional. He even, you know, which you don't usually hear players admit that, right? I know it's 2 years later, maybe it's easier in hindsight, but Esker said, yeah, there's no question that experience helped us. We were much more prepared for it this time around. And so we always talk about the value of experience. It's one of those intangible things that people probably roll their eyes about when we say, oh, they've got Omaha veterans, or, you know, they know how to handle that stage, but it matters. It really does matter. And this was a case in point.
Yeah. I would say this, guys, I'll be the Tim Tadlock apologist right now, because again, like that, in retrospect, it does not look good. You started a true freshman in a super regional and he lost his cool. And you know, were they beating Stanford anyway? I don't know. But Chase Hampton losing his composure was a big part of this, right? But I will say, if I'm Tim Tadlock, first of all, by the way, Chase Hampton, write that name down. Like, this dude's got serious stuff. You know, like it's going to be 95-96 with a hammer. He's got feel for a changeup. He's built like a donkey. Like, this dude's for real. You could see why they fell in love with him. And he, after all the jabbering with the umpire, he still figured out how to get a few zeros in that game. But I will tell you, I think if I'm Tim Tadlock, I'm looking at my bullpen going into regional weekend, and I'm thinking, you know what? We're not winning the whole thing with that bullpen. We're just not. Like, that's not going to get it done. No offense to Connor Queen and Ryan Sublette, but that's not a national championship bullpen. It's not deep enough. It's not good enough. And so, and you know, we know how dominant Micah Dallas has been. That said, that's a huge gamble. It didn't work. You know, Tim Tadlock rolled the dice and lost. He looked like a genius regional weekend, but Stanford was just too good. So really, that was fascinating. They're all fascinating. But all right, boys, let's go to the desert. Tucson, it was a 3-game super regional, really entertaining. Fitzy, let me start with you. Why are the Wildcats going to Omaha?
Their offense is insane, obviously. Insane. I mean, you know, and tip your cap to Doug Nikhazy for you know, holding those guys down. But even in that game, I mean, if you watch the way they drove up his pitch count, it was hilarious watching Nikhazy get so frustrated and saying, stop fouling things off. Like, it's just like he could not get any, you know, it was like 50 something pitches through an inning and 2/3 or some crazy thing. It was nuts, you know, and he only allowed one hit, I think, in that, you know, the first 8 batters, and it was like almost 60 pitches, some crazy thing. That is going to be a real handful to deal with in Omaha. But yeah, I mean, you know, obviously Ole Miss was shorthanded on the mound. I mean, without Gunnar Hoglund, we knew that all along. That was going to be a factor. But they just, you know, that was kind of the thing. Once Hoglund went down, all the whole rest of the way, we kind of felt like they were maybe an arm short, right? And that was the case. I mean, especially, you know, on the road against a really, really good offensive team. But I will say this. We talked about it last week. You know, Arizona, the pitching and defense, we questioned it all year long. It feels like they're kind of peaking in those areas at the right time. Now, I know they gave up some runs this weekend, especially in the middle game, but I feel okay about the state of their pitching and their defense.
Yeah, Nick McCleary going to shortstop when Jacob Blass got hurt, and Tony Bullard emerging, like, just totally flipping his season. And he only gets the opportunity to do that because McCleary goes to shortstop. It's still not a great defense, but it's a defense they can trust. You know, like, McCleary is going to catch the ball, hit to him, and he's going to throw it to first base. He's not going to get to a ton of baseballs. He does not have great range, but he's such a gamer, right? Like, how could you not want to go to war with Nick McCleary? And Bullard's just, you know, he's on fire right now. So, yeah I'm with you, Fitzy. It's, you know what's ironic? Going into the postseason, their fielding percentage had dropped significantly again. They were down in the low 960s. Oh. But I would tell you, the numbers are not telling the whole story. They're playing much better defense than they were. Yep. KR, what do you got? Oh, go ahead. Yeah,
go ahead, Aaron.
Go ahead, Kendall.
No, I was going to say, two things kind of stood out to me. I thought Coach Nathan's decision to start Dawson Nets in game 3, I thought, was a really good decision. I think that kind of maybe surprised them a little bit. He threw pretty well against the Rebels. And then the other thing, you know, if you read the Super Regional scouting report, one of the coaches I talked to out of the Pac-12, you know, he picked Dante Williams as his Pac-12 player of the year. And he texted me the other night and said, I told you, you know, like, Dante looked awesome over the weekend.
Looked awesome.
I mean, hit the ball to all fields. He kind of just set the tone for that offense. I mean, I love that that offense top to bottom, but man, what an electric player to watch.
Yes. He's always been able to really run, but he's gotten so much stronger. He's driving the ball so much more authoritatively. Yeah. He is a star. You know, he's become, we always thought he was a nice player, you know, kind of, mm-hmm. again, speed guy, but he's become a well-rounded star. I mean, it's impressive. And, you know, with Holgate and Bossier and I mean, all those thumpers they got in there. I mean, it is a very, very imposing lineup.
Yeah, I would say, yeah, Dante Williams. I'm kind of the biggest culprit of poo-pooing him. Just thought he was a nice player. I thought the way you said it, Fitzy, was brilliant. Like, he's a great on-base guy at the top of your order, but he's you know, he's not like this flyer that's going to steal 40 bases. He's not Enrique Bradfield by any stretch, but boy, has he come into his own. I mean, he's a game wrecker at the top of that lineup right now. And again, the Arizona offense, if you have vulnerabilities in your bullpen, it is like a, what's the plural of sharks? What are they, a pack of sharks, whatever it is. That's Arizona's offense, right? Like, if you have vulnerabilities in your bullpen, you are in for a long outing because they will abuse it. I mean, they are so relentless and so dynamic offensively. Jacob Berry and Daniel Susak, I cannot believe these are true freshmen. It's just, they are absolutely adult hitters. I mean, Berry's at bats are shockingly advanced. And it's all the way through. You know, McCleary gives you great at bats. I mean, Bullard is up in a tree right now. He's so hot. And so, you know, and one thing, guys, I want to say this before we move on from Tucson. Arizona was amazing. Doug Nikhazy was amazing. I know the Ole Miss fan base is exhausted. I think everyone around their program's got to be exhausted. But these last 4 years for Ole Miss, think about it, top eight seed in 2018, and you get upset, that happens. You know, it did happen to them. 2019, they lose in game three of a super. 2020, they're 16-1. They were excellent. And then this year, lose in game three of a super after losing Gunnar Hoglund, who's a first round pick on the mound, who probably changes that super regional. Hey, you know what? They're probably not even going on the road for a super regional if Gunnar Hoglund doesn't get hurt. But you know, ifs and buts and candies and nuts every day be Christmas. I get it. I can hear my dad saying that right now. But
by the way, go ahead, KR. No, you go ahead.
Yeah, so I feel terrible for Ole Miss and their fan base because they've had four, I believe this in my heart, they've had four consecutive Omaha caliber clubs and not one of them has gotten to go. And that stuff just is hard to sleep at night when that happens. Go ahead, KR.
No, I was going to say, you know, coming into the season, one of the things I was pretty steadfast about would be if Arizona's ERA was under 4.5, they'll be in Omaha. They ended the season at 4.43, and they're in Omaha.
Yeah.
Yep.
Kendall, if you could have just given us a Vegas line to wager that on, we'd all be rich and retired. I mean, that was genius. That was your best call of the year, KR.
No doubt.
Yeah.
Well, and, you know,
blind squirrel.
And I'm gonna call out Coach Rooney because Coach Rooney was a skeptic on Arizona's pitching.
You were,
You
know, and hey, I don't blame you. I mean, and look, they're fielding 960 something. I mean, it's like it's not like it's an elite defense. They've overcome it and they've improved it. But Kendall made the point. He did. I think he said it on the preseason podcast. If they can go under 4.50, they'll be there. And they did it. I mean, Coach Nathan, man, he's the real deal.
Yeah,
Arizona 2 years ago had a 6.23 ERA in 2019.
Yeah, and I think I said it somewhere, but Coach Nathan was so good at, because they really don't have a great pitching staff, right? They have a functional pitching staff. And Coach Nathan was a genius this year of, he always kind of stayed one move ahead of the cops, right? Like, meaning right when trouble was brewing, he could get somebody out of there and get somebody in there. And his feel for pitching, for game management was unreal. And I think the other thing about Arizona, guys, is they're not a great defensive team. And they don't have elite pitching. And you know what? They don't care. Like, that, I think it's the most impressive thing about Arizona is they are so comfortable in their own team identity that it just works. Like, they've been hearing me rip on them about 962 for 4 months, and they just don't care. And I love that. And again, if their offense can get their hands on you, good night. It's just, if you're not Doug Nikhazy or you don't have a couple Doug Nikhazys, not good. That's not going to work out well for you because that offense is insane. All right, boys, Nashville. Kendall, you are a former Nashville resident, so why don't you kick us off? Why are the Commodores going back to Omaha?
Well, honestly, this series is all about how bad I feel for East Carolina. I mean, Gavin Williams, for me, pitched amazing.
Did he make some money or what?
I know, right? Man, nobody's stock went up more over the weekend than Gavin Williams. And then Carson Wisenhunt gave him, what, five or six? Gave up, what, one run maybe?
Into the fifth at least. He was really good for the first four innings. I think he kind of ran out of gas there.
Those two guys were just incredible, and it just didn't matter because Vandy had Kamara and they had Jack Leiter. So, I mean, my takeaway from that series was, one, Kumar on the big stage. I mean, same old, watch, rinse, repeat. I thought Jack Leiter was really good. I thought the breaking ball was excellent against East Carolina. And then the other thing for me is just East Carolina, I thought, looked the part, especially on the mound. You know, even whenever their starters came out, their bullpen, for the most part, still did a pretty good job. So, I was just very impressed with all the starting pitching. That was a storyline for me.
Yep. Fitzy?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, we've talked all year long about Rocker and Leiter, of course, and then we've talked about how, well, don't forget about their offense. Their offense is really explosive. I think they led the SEC in scoring. But when it came down to it in a super regional, it was Rocker and Leiter who really carried them over the finish line. It was low scoring, you know, well-pitched, very well-played games between two really good, complete, well-rounded teams. And, I mean, East Carolina was an Omaha team. You know, they had a really tough draw. You know, against maybe anyone else, almost anyone else, I mean, they probably win. I mean, I really, really like that team. And you're right, Gavin Williams, you know, he'd already kind of taken a step forward over the course of the season. He had a great year. I think we kind of regarded him as a second round kind of guy now. I mean, he's developed that slider to go with the big fastball. He'll still flip that curveball in there. He's actually improved that pitch as a kind of a, you know, steal a strike pitch. But but to then do it on the big stage, you know, and to keep on doing what he's done all year long against Kumar Rocker and that Vandy offense was really impressive. But we'll get to DBU. But, you know, right now, East Carolina and Dallas Baptist are the two best programs out there that haven't been to Omaha, and they're knocking on the door, and it's only a matter of time. But boy, I mean, it reminds me of what Gary Gilmore said years ago. I think it was 08 or 09. They lost a super regional against North Carolina and Cary. And he goes, man, Omaha has never felt so far away. You know, they were one win away and they can't get over the hump and knock on the door. And that's just a really deflating feeling. And, you know, they got there eventually, but you just got to stay the course. And it's not easy to stay patient and stay with it, but, you know, they'll get back on the horse.
Yeah. Fitzy, on the Gary Gilmore thing, I think it was 2010.
Was it?
I'm looking where, I mean, it was both years, right? Like where it was Heartbreak City. Yeah. In 2010, they were the number four overall seed, Coastal Carolina. And I read similar comments to Gary Gilmore basically saying in this postgame presser, look, I think they were like 55-9 going into the postseason. And Gary Gilmore saying, I cannot put a better team on the field than what you just saw. Like it's not possible for us to be better than we were. And that wasn't good enough for Omaha. And it was just the just being distraught. And, you know, I'm with you guys. It's like East Carolina drew one of the best pitching duos in the history of our sport. And I know that's hyperbole, but I believe that. Like, I mean, facing Leiter and Rocker in a weekend series is so low percentage. You know, it's insane how good those kids are. We don't see talents like that in college baseball all that often. I want to say this for the programs that are really discouraged right now. Tim Corbin, who I think is as good as it gets in our sport, leading a program after that super regional win, Tim Corbin is now 5-5 in super regionals. Ooh. So I just think, you know, like the programs and the administrations and the fan bases that are just depressed or panicked or freaking out, Tim Corbin, who any of us would back up the Brinks truck to hire for our program, he's 5-5 in super regionals. It's hard. It's one weekend. The pressure is stifling, right? It's just like it. I don't care how good you are as a coach, how good your team is. Sometimes somebody NC State you, right? Like it's just sometimes you run into a magic team. And for East Carolina guys, I want to take it a step further. Like, you know, and Cliff Godwin was so emotional last year when they lost to Louisville. It actually concerned me because I was worried, like, dang, like, is he emotional to the point of, like, is that a danger sign? But I will say this for East Carolina. I was wrong because you know what's impressive to me at East Carolina is not only they have they been an Omaha caliber program, I see improvement. I think this program is trajectory up. They're really escalating their performance. And so if you keep doing, hey, if they just flatlined, I think they'd get to Omaha in the near future. But I think they're going to actually force the issue because they just keep getting better.
I think the main thing for them is their pitching continues to get better.
Yeah, that's
like,
great.
I feel like their quality of pitching depth continues to get better and better.
Yeah, yeah, Jason Dietrich, there you go.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and we talked about it heading into the year, right? Like, the only question we had about them was who's going to be the dude who can go toe to toe, you know, with a Reed Detmers or somebody in a super regional, because Gavin Williams hadn't been that yet. You know, he hadn't established himself yet. And Wizenhunt was a huge talent. I still think he's a future first rounder, but you know, he hadn't come into his own yet. And then it happened. And so you're right. I think Dietrich deserves a lot of credit for that. But also, Runes, you made the point about Rocker and Leiter. It's not hyperbole. I mean, this is the best pitching duo. I mean, I don't know. Like, I've said it before. I think it's better than Bauer and Cole, because Cole wasn't very good as a junior. Now, they were both, you know, both very, very good as sophomores, that team that went to the finals. But, I mean, you know, to have two guys like this performing at this level, who are both top five talents. I mean, you know, you think about Rice in 2003 with Niemann and Townsend and Umber. I mean, I think it's comparable to that, but I mean, it's as good as we've seen in a long, long, long time, and it's going to make them a tough out next week.
Yeah, sure is, with those extra days off. All right, boys, let's go to the other side of the bracket. Kendall, I'm going to start with you again, because we're going back to the Republic, the Austin Super Regional. What'd you see there, KR?
Pretty much what I expected. You know, South Florida's had a heck of a run. You look at the job that Billy Mull and the staff have done. I mean, this is a team that was very below average during the regular season. They played really well in the conference tournament. They made a regional, and then they took care of business in the regional and got to a super. I think ultimately what it boils down to is Texas is playing at an extremely high level. I think when you look at the rotation with Ty Madden, Tristan Stevens, and you know, Pete Hansen didn't even throw over the weekend because it was a two-game series. But you look at those two guys in particular in the front end, and you look at the back end of the bullpen with Tanner Witt. You know, he was up to 96 over the weekend with a nasty breaking ball. And then offensively, I really like the job that Troy Tulowitzki's done with this offense. I think when you look at Texas lineup top to bottom, you know, Mike Antico got off to a really slow start. I think he was hitting like 205 at one point this year. He was awful early in the season. But, you know, he's a guy that can go into the gaps at TD Ameritrade. He's been red hot over the last month of the season. You know, they still kind of need to get Ivan Melendez going a little bit. He had I think, one or two hits over the weekend. Still didn't look great. He's very susceptible to the breaking ball. But overall, I mean, I really like what this lineup brings to the table. Cam Williams has really good approaches to the plate. Trey Faltini, who's outstanding defensively, again, had three or four really big hits in that Super Regional. So I thought South Florida actually fought pretty hard. You look at the first game, they get the home run, and then Drew Brutcher hits the big home run to tie the game. Texas wins at the bottom. And then South Florida gets off to an early lead thanks to Jared Eaton in the second game. But then once again, what does Texas do? They respond immediately. So I really like where the Longhorns are right now, mindset-wise, and just the way they're playing. With that said, let's be real honest here. They didn't exactly have the toughest road to Omaha. So, you know, Mississippi State, a little bit of a step up from, you know, Arizona State, Fairfield, and South Florida.
Yep. Fitzy, what'd you say?
Yeah, I mean, I think Kendall nailed it. You know, Texas was a huge favorite in this matchup, and South Florida battled. I mean, I was so impressed with the way they came back in the ninth inning in that first game. You just don't see that. It doesn't happen to Texas at Dish Falk. You know, and Tanner Witt, you know, two home runs in the ninth inning to tie it up. I mean, that was wild. But then the way Texas responded right away, you know, to win the game in the bottom of the frame, showed something about those guys. But you know, just kind of tip your cap to South Florida. This was a team that, you know, 2 weeks ago was under 500 overall. They finished not very good in their conference. I mean, they were picked to finish last. That prediction wasn't that far off. Mm-hmm. They just got hot, you know, and they believed, and they were fun to watch. I, you know, Kendall, you were there, but I mean, I thought they played well. They just got, you know, overmatched.
Yeah.
I was going to say, yeah, they did play well. I mean, outfield play could have been a little sketchy at times. I mean, the game winning hit on Friday, on Saturday. I mean, the center fielder was playing way too far up to let that ball go over his head from Eric Kennedy. But for the most part, yeah, they played really well. And, you know, I actually liked a couple of their arms. You know, Colin Sullivan, threw okay for them early. Got a little bit of a jam. Jack Joziak was very solid for them, gave them, I want to say, five-plus innings. gave up a couple of runs. So he was solid for them. And, you know, they had some power arms out of the bullpen. I think the last arm they threw out there yesterday was up to 97. So really good season for those guys to get to a super regional. But the story of the weekend for me, just continued high-level baseball from the Horns.
Yeah, and I'll be interested, guys, to see if South Florida can continue the momentum, because it's a staff that I believe in from a talent perspective. Like, this is a good-looking coaching staff, right? Like, these guys are all accomplished coaches. And it just was weird. Mark Kingston leaves for South Carolina. Billy Mull takes over. And they go to the they had gone to regionals 2 out of 3 years. They go again in 2018. And that's Billy Mull's first year, so he has to be credited for that. But then it really had downslid. You know, you think about it, they're under 500 in 2019. 2020 was pretty awful. They were 6-11. And this year, to your point, Kendall, they're sixth place team in the American. And you start to wonder, man, you're worried about, are they losing traction? But man, the postseason, they got all that back. Jared Eaton, you mentioned, he was as fun a player as there was to watch in the first two rounds of the postseason. And they were so gutsy. I thought South Florida, their performance was, it was very impressive from that standpoint. I want to ask you guys a question about Texas. Okay, I think Texas's challenge is Ty Madden. So Ty Madden, I would assume, is going to throw game one in Omaha. This is going to sound dumb, maybe, but I almost feel like he's their most vulnerable starter, because game two, I'm going to Pete Hansen. And is that how you do it, Kendall, or would you go Tristan Stevens in the 1-0 game?
I think they'll go Madden just because that's what they've done all year. I think David Pierce is one of those guys that, like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And they've gotten this far with that rotation, so they're going to stick with it. But, you know, yeah, I mean, Tristan actually fits really well at that ballpark. You know, he'll get up to 93, but his MO is his ability to command fastball, slider, changeup. And then when you look at Pete Hansen, I mean, honestly, for me, he's been unquestionably their best starter over the last month. I mean, you're talking about a guy who he doesn't have quite his velo back that he had, 2 years ago. But, you know, he's up to 89 now, and his breaking ball, I think, was in the 2700s in the spin rate a couple weeks ago in the regional. And, you know, again, he was able to really locate that thing, to his arm side a couple weeks ago. And so I think he's been their best starter, but I just don't see David Pierce as one of those guys that's going to mess with his weekend rotation whenever that's what's kind of gotten them here.
Yeah. Fitzy, you have a thought on that?
No, I agree. I mean, I think you kind of got to dance with the girl that brung you here. I think it'd be a huge surprise if he deviated from that order of those top three guys. Although you're right about Hansen. I mean, and how good he's been, and like he didn't pitch in the super, right, Kendall?
Nope.
So
no,
I mean,
he's fresh.
So do you give him 2 weeks off, or do you move him? Maybe you do move him up, and maybe that's the reason.
Stevens had one of his worst starts, but I agree with you guys. Like being around Greg Swindell and Keith Moreland for the Big 12 tournament. Like their praise of Tristan Stevens was effusive. Like, hey, he's the most trusted guy. You know, he leads their team in wins. I think you guys are right. Like Ty Madden is who you're going with. That's your first round pick. He's a great competitor. But I just truth serum, I think he's vulnerable. I think if I'm an opponent, I would rather face Ty Madden than Pete Hansen. Pete Hansen, I saw him in Oklahoma City. It was filth. I mean, just like nasty fastball, nasty slider, no chance for hitters, and he's kind of got that ace demeanor too. I just if I'm David Pierce, no offense to Tristan Stevens, I don't think as important as winning the first two games are in the regional format, I don't think I could live with myself if Pete Hansen didn't have something to do with either of those two games.
And one little tidbit too is Tristan Stevens on the bar fight meter, like up here, easy 80.
Yeah,
anybody that has a tat on his arm and pitches like that, like, yep. I want to be in a fight with that guy.
He's a, pardon my French, I won't use French. He's a bad dude. He's really, I'll keep it PG. Yes. So, all right, boys, let's keep going. Oh, man. Stark Vegas. Yes, you did. Fitzy, why don't you kick us off there? Tell us about Stark Vegas.
Let's pour one out for Michael Patrick Rooney III's Irish, because they really gave Mississippi State all they could handle there, you know. And even in the last game, I thought that the key moment was, I forget what inning it was, early in the game, maybe the third, Rowdy Jordan makes that diving catch to end the frame, and that kind of gets the crowd going. And then, you know, I think I even tweeted, like, so many times it feels like this is when, you know, a team will at home, right, a team will build off that big play at the end of the inning when it's a third out. And they'll string together a big inning, and that's exactly what happened. They put up six runs there in the bottom of the frame, and it just kind of felt like Notre Dame had to stop him right there. That was the moment. And the dude effect, I mean, you know, it's real. I mean, like, they feed off that energy in such an impressive way. And Notre Dame handled the environment really well. You know, I mean, I know that the first game, I mean, maybe it sped up on a little bit. The four errors was very uncharacteristic for Notre Dame, the best fielding percentage team in the country. But, you know, they still, like, it was back and forth game. It was very competitive. And then, you know, second game, they took it to them. And then the third game, even when they're down big, they battled back and made it competitive and, you know, had a chance to get the tying run to the plate in the ninth inning, you know, when they had been down 10-2 at one point. Like, they still fought. So impressed with Notre Dame. Obviously impressed with Mississippi State too, because Notre Dame is a real opponent and Mississippi State beat them. But, you know, credit both teams.
Yeah. KR, what do you got on Stark Vegas?
Well, first of all, Landon Sims was awesome out of the bullpen yesterday. You know, he had that one inning where he kind of wobbled a little bit, and, you know, Lando looked like he might have been on the ropes a little bit, but he settles back in, gets back in a groove, gets him to Omaha. And the other thing for me, like, to go back to Notre Dame, how about Nico's home run? Oh, like, not only did the right fielder not move, like, you could hear the crowd going, oh. I mean, that was one of the most ridiculous home runs I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, I honestly, I am going to say it's the most ridiculous home run I've ever seen. I mean, you know, it was,
especially considering hitting off of freaking Landon Sims.
Yeah, and probably you can only hit a ball that far when you're facing Lando Sims, right? Like, you need every. I mean, that ball was hit 10,000 feet. That's the biggest joke of a home run. Like, nobody moved in the stadium. Like, to your point, Ken, everyone was just like jaw open. Yeah, it was crazy. And I would say, first of all, Mississippi State's program, guys, this is serious what's going on in Starkville. Five straight supers. Who's got the longest Omaha streak in the country right now? Hale State. Three straight, right? Like, not Vandy, not LSU, not Florida. Hale State. Like, come on. And you know, five straight supers is crazy.
You know what's interesting is I feel like Mississippi State and Arkansas are on similar trajectories. Like, you know, both those programs were programs that would get to Omaha and they would take a little bit of a step back, not a big step back, but they would take a little bit of a step back. They'd go on a road for a regional, like Mississippi State went to Tallahassee, and Arkansas has gone on the road before. But now those programs are to the point where, like, with Gotro at one place, and Lamonis and Van Horn and Matt Hobbs and Nate Thompson at the other, like, those two programs, like, they're just reloading.
Yep.
Like, they're not having a down year. They're reloading every year at this point.
Yeah, and it gets passed down, right? Like, Jake Mangum wasn't going to let Mississippi State not go to Omaha. And it was like whatever you know, gene that is, he injected it into Tanner Allen and Rowdy Jordan this year. And so they were taking these pups and, like, hey, just everyone take a deep breath. We go to Omaha. That's what we do. It's going to be fine. And to your guys' point, Notre Dame was just so good. I Notre Dame – is shockingly good at baseball. Like, that's just, it's an awesome. Yeah. They play great baseball. Like, they there's no way they had the pitching to stay in that super regional. And to your point, Fitzy, that game three, look, it was going to be 100-1 and they wouldn't let that happen. I couldn't be more impressed with Notre Dame. I hope they're ready to write a big check, because if they're not careful, Link Jarrett he won't even have ever bought a house in South Bend. It's one of the most impressive coaching jobs I think I've seen in 10 years. Just nuts. And that was a fun super regional. It was really just awesome in every way. So,
agreed.
Good on you, Hale State. 40,000 people there for the weekend. All right, let's go to Colombo.
I was going to say, to top it all off, the Stark Vegas folks got to experience Shotgun Spratling.
Yeah.
There's that. That's right.
The most interesting man in America. Other than Eric Sorensen.
The only man out of 14,000 souls in that ballpark wearing a mask, I think.
He looked like he was wearing 14,000 masks. I mean, he was seriously masked up.
I was giving him a joking heck over the fact that he's vaccinated wearing like 18 masks. So
yeah, that's right.
Better be safe than sorry. I appreciate that.
Shoddy survived COVID but died of asphyxiation. Yes, well done. All right, boys, let's go. Hey, Shoddy is a Southeastern now, right? Isn't he a Georgia native?
Yeah, he's from Georgia. No,
like,
you know,
Landon Sims.
No, it was good for him to be able to experience that, because, you know, he's out on the West Coast, and I know he's been at some really good venues, but man, that's a one of a kind place out there, and it certainly was that for that super.
Yep. All right, boys, let's do Columbia, Virginia, DBU. Fitzy, you're the ACC incumbent. What do you got for us?
And I just watched Dallas Baptist in Fort Worth last weekend. So yeah, that was a weird super regional. You know, you got 2-3 seeds playing in Columbia, South Carolina. You know, whatever. We don't need to go over the hosting thing again. But I will say this: Virginia clearly was comfortable in that ballpark. And it's funny because, you know, think about the regional. They're playing against Old Dominion, who led the nation in home runs. They're playing against South Carolina, who's a home run hitting team in their own ballpark. Virginia, not a home run hitting team. They play Davenport. You know, it's not a home run park, and that's just not how they're built. They don't have anyone with double-digit homers on their roster. And they beat both those teams. And then they face Dallas Baptist, who's a home run hitting team that looks tailor-made for that ballpark. And they beat DBU, you know, and how do they do it? With a home run, right? A grand slam in that decisive game, which is also how they won the regional, with a walk-off home run. So, I mean, it's like they've kind of proven that they're adaptable to different styles of play and different ballparks. And actually, that's one of the reasons why it's stupid that I didn't pick them to win the regional or the super, because I really liked their team. You know, watching them in the ACC tournament, which the ball was flying out of that place in Charlotte, it was like, man, look at the way this offense is adapted to this ballpark. Like, I don't care what their numbers say. This team is very offensive. They're scary. I don't know why I didn't believe that, but well, I was being contrarian with my picks. But anyway, listen, they're good. I mean, the offense has become eventually what we thought it would be in the preseason. You know, they slumped in the first half, but right now it's rolling, and the pitching is still really. I mean, here's the crazy thing to me about this though. We knew Abbott was Abbott. We knew the bullpen was the best in the ACC, one of the best in the country. I didn't quite know what to make of the rotation after Abbott, you know, and the fact that they started Griff McGarry and they got that outing out of him, what was it, 7 or 8 innings? I mean,
7 innings, 10 Ks.
Come
crazy.
On.
Crazy. He had a 7.5 ERA going into the game.
You know, and there was a moment in the game where I think I even said on Twitter, like, he walked a couple guys or something, and I was like, oh, like, yeah. I doubt he gets out of this inning. And I was wrong. You know, credit to Griff McGarry. Credit to that coaching staff for sticking with him. And credit to him for sticking with it all year long, because he was kind of buried on that staff a while back, you know, with good reason. He couldn't throw strikes. He's never been able to throw strikes consistently. But, like, he stuck with it. He kept working at it. And the coaches saw something in him at the right time. I mean, they put him in there. They trusted him with a season on the line in the regional, and they go to him in game two of a super in a do or die game, and he delivers. Like, talk about trusting your players. That's awesome. I mean, that's just really impressive.
Yep, I'm with you. KR, what do you got on Columbia?
Yeah, I was going to say the biggest thing for me was the job that, you know, Wyatt did out of the bullpen. You know, was it the second game, 5 2/3 of shutout innings? You know, that we talk so much about, you know, guys that step up in the postseason, and to go on a postseason run, you got to have guys who maybe you don't expect to step up and have that kind of a role. But I mean, he was awesome in the regional and the super regional for UVA. And I think the other thing for me is, I mean, a little bit ECU-ish, like, I mean, I'm kind of feel bad for the fact that DBU got some really good starting pitching. I mean, Rhett Cuba was outstanding yesterday. He threw, what, eight innings for them? And, I mean, he was up to 95. I mean, he had nasty stuff and just nothing to show for it.
Yep. I'm with you guys. That was a tough super regional for me to watch. Ryan Robleski, who was great again, he's the son of one of my best friends. Corey Robleski was our teammate at Notre Dame. And then I've got Chris Newell, who I grew up with his dad and his uncle. We went to the same little league, same high school. So it was weird to watch that super regional, but both teams I thought were, you know, really had incredible seasons. Virginia's struggles early, well documented. They start ACC play 4-11 and they're dead and buried, right? Like, we're talking about, will they even finish ahead of Virginia Tech in the ACC for the, you know, that would have been the first time that would have ever happened. So that they didn't finish ahead of Virginia Tech. The one thing I will say, guys, just truth serum, people have been doing that comparison, 2015 Virginia, 2020 Virginia. And, you know, I try to be a diplomat, and I answered those questions diplomatically. But in my brain, what I've been saying the last 2 weeks is, will everyone please stop it? The 2015 Virginia team played in game 3 of the College World Series finals the year before, and they had 2 first-round pick freshmen on that team in Pavin Smith and Hazley. Like, stop it. This Virginia offense in 2021 is anemic. Like, everybody's hitting 240. But I'll tell you, I had my epiphany this weekend finally, and I think Kyle Teal is why, because that dude is a monster. He's a little smaller monster, but he's a baller. And so, and I've always like, I think Zach Geloff is really like, he's an offensive monster too. So I'm telling you, I think Virginia can win that side of the bracket. Yeah. I've totally come full circle on them.
And Kyle Teal is your first round pick freshman this year. He's going to be a top 10 pick. I mean, you know, he can do it all. You see how tooled up he is, the throws he's making from right field. He hits the game winning grand slam. He runs well. Oh, by the way, he's also a catcher. You know, I mean, like he's right now he's playing right field. They got Logan Michaels, such a good veteran, steady guy. But I mean, he could be the number one overall pick in a couple of years. So, yeah, I mean, the talent level there with him and Geloff, who is, I think, also a first round kind of talent. Now, whether he goes in the first round, unclear because of, you know, the performance factor, but I think he's helped the stock a lot. I mean, it wouldn't shock me if somebody takes him in the first round because I think the bat plays and he runs, and I mean those guys are very talented. And then, you know, with I think Cody A and Kent in the middle, Devin Ortiz as a senior has been awesome. I mean, you know, and Wyatt Kendall talked about another young guy that, I mean, it's a high end talent. It's 93, 96, 97 with a wipeout slider, power slider. I mean, they have a lot of talent. Mm-hmm. They're deeper on the mound than that 2015 team was. You know, that 2015 team, if you recall, they really rode, you know, Spores. Waddell and Spores and Connor Jones, right? It was really those three guys. This team, they've got one real horse with Abbott, and then they're going to mix and match a lot. But I love the variety of the bullpen and the way they can come at you. They didn't even use Stephen Schock in this series. I don't know why. I don't know what this deal was with that. But like, you know, you've got Kyle Whitten, you know, who closed out the second game, who's 95 mile an hour with a wipeout slider, and you got, you know, I mean, Wyatt, and you got, you know, guys from Messenger who's got huge stuff. I mean, I love teams that have good bullpens in Omaha. And they fit the bill.
Love it. Should we do Knoxville, baby? KR, wait, you ready? Fellas, Knoxville, Knox Vegas, anyone?
KR, did you have a final thought?
No. Well, two things. Stephen Schock's going to be in Omaha, so I hope Dippin' Dots is in the ballpark. Number two, can we get Kyle Teal, really impressive, but can we get him a tighter helmet?
Not until he goes on a cold streak. We are not goodness messing gracious. With anything right now. Yeah.
Oh man, that we're seeing a lot of his flow. But
I do have one more thing though, just to backtrack. DBU, we talked about it. Like my heart breaks for those guys. Like I actually can't believe they haven't got to Omaha yet. Kind of like East Carolina. Like we've talked about it before. Two best programs that haven't been there. God, I mean, they run a model program. Dan Heefner is such a class act. You know, I mean. Dan Fitzgerald, like those guys are awesome. I mean, it's really, really incredible the way they recruit every year, the way they develop talent, the disciplined offensive approach. This team was good. I mean, Hamill and Koba at the top, they kind of got beat in the bullpen, you know, and Peyton Sherlin and Craig and Keckley were so good in the regional and so good all year long. Those guys are good. But when it came down to it, that was the difference in this series was Virginia out bullpened them.
Which is unusual because DBU had in the past had always been famous for a little light on the front end and dominant in the back end. And yeah, it just feels, how about DBU guys? Talk about consistency. 10 of the last 11 years, they've been in a regional. They've won two of those regionals. I mean, you keep doing that. It's a matter of time.
They have the longest active streak of 40 win seasons. I think it's 8 in a row. They're the only program in the country that has eight straight 40 win seasons.
Yep. Amen. KR, why don't you kick us off in Knox Vegas?
I think the biggest thing, I mean, it's kind of the same story with Tennessee that's been all year. That lineup is so potent. And, you know, if you give those guys extra chances and you don't make the right pitches, they are going to make you hurt. And when you look at that lineup over the weekend, whether it's Jake Rucker, Connor Pavloni, Max Ferguson, I mean, the list kind of goes on. That's just a great lineup. I really like, you know, how Tennessee sits offensively going into the College World Series. I mean, I do have concerns with the fact they kind of rely a little bit on the long ball, to say the least, at home. But, I mean, I've also seen them live in the gaps, too. You know, I saw them at A&M earlier this year, and they hit a lot of gappers in that series. So, I mean, they can be a little versatile in that regard. But, I mean, they play with an edge. I mean, they play their you-know-what off, and you're going to get their best effort. And so it kind of goes from the top to the players. And so I'll be curious to see how they handle Omaha. But, you know, Chad Dallas was pretty solid for them over the weekend. I'll be interested to see how they use Blake Tidwell, kind of like Pete Hansen at Texas. Tidwell did not throw in the super. So if you're Tony Vitello, you know, do you?
I think he threw game two. Check that. Yeah, he was.
Did he throw the bullpen?
No, seven innings.
No, he was the starter.
I was thinking of Heflin then. My bad.
Yeah, Heflin, I don't think got a touch in the super.
Okay, he definitely didn't start. Then.
Yep.
Yeah, so you know how do you use it? You know, do you go with Dallas, Tidwell, Heflin, or do you put Heflin back in that, you know, in that number two spot in Omaha? So I'll be interested to see how they do that. But I mean, I can't wait to see this game with Virginia. I mean, I think you look at those two teams. I mean, you're talking about two red hot, sizzling hot teams. So something's going to have to give.
Yep. Fitzy, what do you got on this one?
Well, you know, part of it is LSU had to win the game that Landon Marceau started. And, you know, if you watch that game, the on-air interview with Paul Maneri around the third inning, he was like, yeah, I mean, he just kind of looks tired. I mean, he just didn't have his good fastball and, you know, slider wasn't just, and then he kind of reached another gear, but to get out of a jam there. But like, I think Maneri knew, like his ace didn't have his best stuff. And that was, you know, and if they win that game, who knows, maybe they can scrounge something out, but clearly they were just kind of overmatched by the Tennessee off. They didn't have the arms to shut those guys down. You know,
Garrett Edwards got hurt.
Yeah. Yeah. That didn't help at all. But, you know, and LSU, hey, they competed, obviously. I mean, it's cool to see that they got to this point. You know, Dylan Cruz did his best to keep him in that game early, hitting a couple of home runs. Yeah, I mean, and also I thought in the first game, I mean, Hilliard pitched great. And you can probably, in hindsight, say maybe they should have gone longer with him. It was 76 pitches. You know, he hadn't really been going deep into games. Maybe they thought at that point it's time to make the move. I don't blame them for making the move when they did. But like, of course, as soon as they do, you know, Coleman gets kind of jumped and that's the ball game. The bottom line is it's just so difficult to contain Tennessee because it's like we talked about it. It's like Arkansas. It's like NC State. It's a very relentless offense. Notre Dame, you know, these teams that they grind you out from top to bottom. And they're multifaceted. Obviously, the power has been a huge factor in the postseason. They've hit a whole lot of home runs all season. But I mean, you know, the biggest thing is to me that is the quality of their at bats. It's better even than the numbers show. They just really make you work, and they got guys that can hurt you with a long ball, or you know they do have some speed in the lineup, and it's just a very tough competitive offense and defense as well is rock solid.
Yeah. I would say this, guys, about Tennessee. I love this team. I just love this team. I mean, they're edgy, athletic, diverse. But I think you guys made a good point about, you know, a lot of their biggest moments happened in Knoxville this year. And this is going to be a really different facility for them. Now, they were very good in Hoover, so I don't want to take anything away from them. But Hoover can play small at times. You know, the ball can move in Hoover. Hoover, to me, is kind of all over the place. But, you know, still, TD Ameritrade couldn't be more different than Lindsey Nelson Stadium, hashtag Schmedium. But Tennessee's, like, I think about one of the fun things about this Omaha is, you know, we got Rocker, Leiter, Madden, and we got some incredible arms. Brendan Beck, I love. But, I mean, NC State, that's a special position player group. Tennessee, special position player group. Arizona, special offense. You know, like if you like position players over pitching, there's some things that you're going to really like in this deal. I thought LSU, you know, this is one of the most coveted jobs in the country any year, you know, without questions. But this year, for sure, because the young talent on this deal, like this is, you could win it all with this crew of youngsters. Like I still can't even believe that Dylan Cruz and Trey Morgan were true freshmen. Still does not compute for me. Like nobody does this to the SEC as true freshmen. These guys, I mean, you know, it's a shame. It's kind of a shame about Nico Cavadas' home run because we're forgetting about the two ridiculous home runs that Dylan Cruz hit in game two of this game. I mean, just, you know, anyway, I would say too, Paul Maneri is clearly not watching our live stream. But Paul, if you are listening, your career is one that needs to be cherished in college baseball. Like the legends, the Mount Rushmore guys, like Augie Garrido, Skip Bertman, they're heroes in the game. Yeah, you know, but Skip Bertman's career is not real. Like, no one's going to win five national titles in a decade again, ever. It's not going to happen. Paul Maneri's career, to me, is more real. Like, and his relationship with his dad, he mentioned that in the post-game presser. His dad's a Hall of Famer. He's a Hall of Famer. 1,500 wins, having to, you know, kind of build your career by blocks and pieces. And I think Paul's going to end up in broadcasting. I hope that's the case, and I hope I get to work with him. Because I think he's an awesome man, and I think his career was amazing. I loved watching his teams compete. I loved coaching against him the one time I got to do it, even though we got our butts beat, and that was fairly embarrassing. But still, I mean, I look back on it with joy. So, yeah, Paul Maneri, it was sad to see his career end. But what a career! What a stinking career!
I hope he gets into broadcasting because I need more. I need more Paul Maneri in my life. Oh. And it just, you know, even the post, I mean, the interviews, you know, mid game, which, like, they're usually just like routine question, routine answer, routine question, routine answer. Okay, coach, we'll let you get back to your business. Paul, yeah. I mean, like, he offers insight on that stuff. Yeah. And he just, like, it's just so, he wears his heart on his sleeve. And, like, he actually tells you things like, yeah, I don't think Marceau has it today. I mean, like, how often do you hear a coach in one of those in-game interviews actually say basically that? I mean, it's so rare, the honesty with that guy. I love him, and I look forward to seeing what's next for him.
Yeah, I mean, the authenticity when it comes to that guy is pretty impressive. I mean, you look at the top of the ninth inning there when they show him the dugout, and you can, like, clearly see he's, like, wiping tears away. Like, that's kind of who Paul Maneri is. That's kind of who he was to all of us, you know, just a very honest, authentic person.
Yeah. All right, gentlemen, that was awesome. That was a really fun conversation. Guys, we are 48 hours from wiping our faces with cloth napkins at the Drover. I mean, like, and that is happening.
There was a question in the chat, in the comments here. How many times do we think we're going to get to the Drover this week? I think we set the over-under in 3.5. And I'm going to take the over because it's been 3 years, because there was that fire in 2019, so they were closed, and there was no World Series 2020. Yeah. I think we're going to get our money's worth this week.
I might have had an ops person from one of the Omaha teams send me the Drover menu, so I can tell you the Drover is back, because I got a picture of their menu on my text messages. Yeah.
But guys, we are a championship level club here. We don't get ahead of ourselves. We have the Drover on the docket for Thursday night. That's the only thing we're focused on. Win every salad bar, compete, win every whiskey filet. So we're just taking it one Drover trip at a time. I've told you guys this before. This is I travel a lot for my life. This is the only trip of the year where I check a bag. I bring this big monster suitcase. Jenny and I, my wife and I, are already looking at swag that we're going to purchase. By the way, they better have the Tent City thing going again in Omaha. I haven't seen confirmation or non-confirmation.
I'm sure it is. COVID in Omaha like 8 months ago. So
there you go. So because Team Rooney's ready to, we're ready to make like we're ready to make purchases.
Runes, you got to check two bags. You got to bring your golf clubs for the Lakeshore Invitational.
No, my game does not deserve that hassle.
I thought that was the Carter Clay Classic.
The Carter Lake Classic. Excuse me.
That's right. We will rent clubs, and there's no reason to lug clubs up there to shoot 100. But we will do it with smiles on our faces. So, gentlemen, so excited to see you two and every other ugly college baseball mug that we love in Omaha. It's like a reunion every year. Just super pumped to get there. And you know, to the fans that we didn't do a great job with the questions tonight, but hey, we were too excited to talk about Supers. So, boys, have a great rest of the night. We will see you. We'll see you at the Drover in 2 days. Let's go.
Bring it on.
All right, Omaha, baby. Let's go. Have a great night, everyone.